They overwhelm you with their work. They overwhelm you with pressure.
Shoot, they score!
I felt like I did all the right things to prepare for this game.
We had Patrick Crosby score!
Give them 20 minutes of room where they can make a bleed for it, we did.
He doesn't sign with Winnipeg Jets in the next couple of weeks. No player will be more coveted.
Dustin Byfuglien pulls it in!
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Scheifele in the war of the middle now for line A with speed across the line, shooting, score! What a bullet by Patrick Line A, and the Jets regain their two-goal lead. It's 3-1, Winnipeg.
That rocket off the stick of Patrick Laine proved to be the game-winning goal last night as the Jets defeated the New Jersey Devils by a 3-2 margin. They win their second in a row after the disappointing road trip. They improve on the season to 11-12-2. Three games under 500. Some people might say one game under 500, but that's incorrect. Three games under 500. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this evening at tsn1290.ca. Good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. 2 hours of hockey talk for you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and of course our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. You just heard the Moose. They won their third in a row, three straight on the road trip. They win it in a shootout on the strength of Eric Comrie, 32 saves plus seven more in the shootout. Jack Roslovic with a goal and an assist. They say good evening to Ezra Ginsberg and Sean Assor, who joined me in studio here at TSN 1290 for the next 2 hours of hockey talk. Ezzy, looking good, my friend.
Big shootout win for the Moose, Drew.
Yeah.
But more importantly, are you going to give me props
for
my Grey Cup prediction?
I mean, I got to say it. You know, Nostradamus is in the building. You nailed the Ottawa Red Blacks. You were the only one who called the upset, as far as I know. You called the upset. They were going to defeat the Calgary Stampeders. I salute you and that big, beautiful brain of yours.
Yeah, well, I don't know how big it is, but I'll take that salute.
It is beautiful.
The head's big.
And you know, want to know why I'll take that salute?
Crack that skull open and see how big that brain is.
I didn't put any money down.
No.
And I didn't watch a single minute of it because I was at a wedding.
Yeah, how was the wedding?
Yeah, it was a great wedding. I was checking my phone a little bit, but you know, you're at a wedding.
Yeah.
You can't really check your phone too much.
No, you were texting me, though.
Well, I saw Sheldon there.
Yes, you saw Sheldon and felt the need to text me.
Yeah, Sheldon/dad was there.
Sheldon/dad.
And so was Tana/mom.
Tana/mom, yeah. Yes. You know.
So,
actually, they're now Baba and Zeta, but you know, good enough. Yeah. You know, mom/dad, Baba/Zeta.
Yeah, so I caught the highlights, and you know, props to Ottawa, back in the CFL now after a little bit of a hiatus. They haven't won the Grey Cup in a long time. Henry Burris caps off what is probably going to be his last game. Great career for him, you know.
You know what, Ezzy, you're retiring Henry before he's retiring himself. You know, he might have some words for you as a result. He certainly takes the motivation from the doubters and, you know, proved that on Sunday in Toronto when he stuck it to everybody who said he was washed up and he was done earlier in the season.
And, guys, regardless if this is Henry Burris' last game, if he's played his last game, what a way to go out.
Sure.
You win the Grey Cup. Mm-hmm. His third Grey Cup, I believe, or second Grey Cup. I think he's been in three.
Yeah.
So it's either his second or third.
I think it's his second win. I think it was the third one he played in because he would have played in one in Regina when he was a member of the Ticats still a few years ago when Saskatchewan won at home. Was that 4 years ago now? 3 years ago? I can't remember. Math is hard for me.
Good for him.
But anyways, I would retire. If you win, you're 41. Go off on a high note like that. Who am I to tell an athlete to retire? Johnny, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, thanks. You know, we had to rejig the schedule a little since last week. I'm back, though. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you.
We had a big shootout win, and then you guys stole my shout-out, because I was going to...
Oh, that's why you were shouting out Ezzy.
I was going to give my friend here a nice pat on the back and say the one guy to call the Ottawa Red Blacks win.
Yeah.
Sitting right here.
I think it was
live
me.
On the air, by the way.
Yeah,
live
I know.
On
he
the
called
air.
It with Jimmy well, on live, Sunday
yeah,
morning.
It was, yeah.
Well, and Saturday.
Toth laughed
I called
at
it
you.
Saturday as well. Yeah.
Did we talk about it on Saturday?
We did.
Oh, I don't remember.
Yep.
I checked out of ice.
Thanks for that, Sean. I think it was me and Milt Stegall. I think Milt Stegall also picked Ottawa, if I'm not mistaken.
No, Jock Climie did, I think, if I recall. it was okay. Jock, because of course he is a former Ottawa Rough Rider,
right.
Going way back before he went over to play for the Owls. I don't even know what decade that would have been at this point in time, but I think it was you and Jock Lamy.
Yeah, good for the city of Ottawa. I have a lot of family there. You used to work there.
Live there.
Fantastic city.
Yeah, yeah, very good. Exactly. Nice big parade there in Ottawa. So good for the Red Blacks. Let's shift our focus, of course, to the Winnipeg Jets. They had the disappointing road trip where they went 0-5. They've come home, and nothing like home cooking. They win on Sunday against the Nashville Predators by that 3-0 margin, a 1-0 game with the two empty netters. And then they piggyback on that win last night against New Jersey with that 3-2 victory over a scrappy New Jersey Devils team that never wanted to go away. I thought that when it was 2-0, and then they made it 2-1, okay. And then it was 3-1. I thought that was sort of going to be the end of the Devils. I thought they'd wilt a little bit at that point in time. But they get the cheap goal on Connor Hellebuck. Fortunately for the Winnipeg Jets and their fan base, it doesn't come any closer than that. The Jets are able to get the clean regulation win, a 3-2 margin of victory over the Devils.
Yeah, guys, it was a very chippy game, and you got to give a lot of credit to Connor Hellebuck. It looked like he was going to pick up the goose egg before he let up a little bit there in the third period and gave up that goal to Miles Wood, which is a pretty rough goal to let in from a bad angle.
That was weird.
Earlier in the game, it was a very strange goal, and it was especially strange because of how well Connor Hellebuck was playing, right? So you got to give him credit, played really well, stopped a breakaway by Miles Wood, and then a penalty shot by Miles Wood. So
he didn't really stop it. Miles Wood just decided to deke it into the corner.
Well, you got to give him credit still, Drew, for being in position,
yeah,
absolutely,
right?
So he was really good. He set the new record for the Jets' home shutout streak for a goaltender. So he was really good. And I thought Corey Schneider was also very good. And, you look at the Jets' goals, and for me, what was most impressive about that Jets win was the pressure. And that's something we've seen, I think, more so at home than on the road. But the Jets were all over the puck. I thought they were winning a lot of puck battles. They were making it very difficult for the Devils to get anything going. And sure, they had some chances. But you look at the two goals that were scored before Patrick Laine's game-winning goal, Sean, and they were both rebounds. Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele going to the net on the first goal. Buff was wreaking havoc in front of Corey Schneider. And then Mark Scheifele buries the rebound. And then Andrew Kopp puts the puck on net. And, Blake Wheeler goes to the net, picks up the rebound. So they weren't the prettiest goals, with the exception of Patrick Laine's absolutely beautiful wrist shot goal to the blocker side of Corey Schneider. But those first two goals, Drew, were just simply going to the net, working hard. I thought that was a very workmanlike effort by the Jets. And it could have been a trap game for them because they beat the Nashville Predators big time. And they could have lost that game and kind of lost a little bit of momentum there. So I thought it was a very impressive win.
Yeah, they could have easily thrown this season out if they came home and lost two games in a row, seven in a row. They'd come home, they win the two games, big 4 points for the team. And yeah, like you said, we spent the whole day kind of talking about it here at the station about how this is a different-looking Devils team. This isn't the trap team anymore. They come at you with speed, and they come at you with tenacity. And it was a great game to watch from both sides of the ice. I mean, both teams were flying, forechecking. Mark Scheifele is an absolute puck hawk. His skills tracking down guys with the puck and stripping them of it is just impressing me more and more as this day goes on, or as the season goes on, pardon me. And it's interesting also with Brian Little back now. We saw a couple different power play looks for the Jets. Some interesting rejigging of the man advantage. We saw some different setups.
Scheifele playing the point.
Blake Wheeler on the half wall. It was really interesting to see how Brian Little, just the addition of a new centerman, kind of reinvents the wheel, in so to speak.
Oh, I thought the power play, while it wasn't successful in getting a puck past Corey Schneider, the movement on the power play was very impressive.
Well, that on that 5-on-3, they hit two posts, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Patrick Laine hit a post, and I believe it was Nikolai Ehlers who hit the other post. Yeah. So I agree, Sean. I think, you saw some different looks, and Brian Little, wow, does he ever change the outlook of your team? And that's what a veteran center in the NHL can do, right? So he's good on faceoffs, and, he was very impressive. He almost scored about 30 seconds into the game, if you remember, right?
Good wrist.
So, it was really nice to see him come back, and not only come back, but go out there and be counted on in important situation. So a very big win for the Jets. The Devils are not a pushover. Right now, the Devils are in a playoff spot.
They are in
so,
the Eastern Conference.
You know, they're not, you know, there's definitely not a lot of separation between them and some of the other teams in the East, but certainly it was a very big win. Connor Hellebuck played well again, and even though he lets in a bit of a weak goal to Miles Wood, I mean, they still get the win, and he only lets in two goals. So I think you got to give the entire team a lot of credit for the way they played.
Yeah, Nick Ehler spoke about the return of Brian Little post-game. He said that just seeing him on the ice and how tenacious he was and how much energy he brought fired up the whole bench. And that's what you want to hear. You want to hear that these guys coming back into the lineup fire up their teammates. And guys are willing to admit that. And it's really great to see the IR getting smaller as the days go on.
And it sounds like it's going to get smaller ahead of tomorrow mm-hmm. night's game against the Edmonton Oilers, which we'll talk about next mm-hmm. segment. Sounds like Matthew Perreault, assuming everything goes well in the pregame skate, likely to come off IR, join the team tomorrow. And Marco Dano, who looked like he may have been seriously injured when that high stick got up near the eye.
See the pictures?
I saw the pictures, and he was laughing and joking about
Happy birthday, by the way, Marco
yeah,
Dano.
Yeah, Marco Dano. It's his birthday today, and that's his birthday present. He tweeted that, you know, his birthday gift is he finally looks like a hockey player because his eye is all cut up and everything else. But you have to assume that, you know, the way he was joking about it on social media means that he's avoided serious injury. You guys both mentioned Brian Little, and from what I took from his presence, he's just a stabilizing force. Mm-hmm. for the Winnipeg Jets. And he can play, you know, that first line center role. He's probably to some extent been overtaken by Mark Scheifele in that role. So even if he's now quote unquote the second line center, whatever it is, he is just a veteran presence who sort of keeps everything calm. You know what you're going to get from Brian Little, shift in and shift out. So from head coach Paul Maurice, who sometimes, you know, when you have so many young guys in your roster, sometimes they could freelance a little bit, maybe cause some gray hair. You throw at a guy like Brian Little, and you can throw him out with a guy like Blake Wheeler. Well, those are two veterans who know how to play the game, quote-unquote, the right way, and they're going to, if it's a fire wagon, if it's a fire drill for the Winnipeg Jets, Paul Maurice knows you can throw a line of Little and Wheeler out, or Little and Stafford, or whatever it might be, and it's going to calm everything down. And just having that option available is probably very reassuring to the Winnipeg Jets head coach.
Yeah, and we talked about Matthew Perreault potentially coming back tomorrow night against the Edmonton Oilers. Tobias Enstrom is going to be back mm-hmm. in the lineup tomorrow night. And you're just getting healthier and healthier, as you mentioned, Sean. And, you know, you need these players for this upcoming short road trip against the Chicago Blackhawks and the St. Louis Blues back-to-back Saturday, Sunday. And then looking ahead another week, you've got Calgary and Edmonton on the road, not this coming weekend, but the weekend after that. So, I mean, there's some hard games coming up. Mm-hmm. They've got Detroit and the Rangers next week at home. So, I mean, I said before last night's game that if the Jets could win three of these next four games, I thought that they could really make up for that five-game losing streak on the road. So they've already won one.
Yeah.
And you got to assume that if they don't win both of the games against Chicago and St. Louis, it's going to be tough to get 4 points. So maybe they get three of the 4 points. But that's really tough to go into those two rinks and get 4 points. So if they can win, you know, two of the next three games, I think you're really setting yourself up nicely, because you can't just lose against Edmonton and kind of play 500 hockey. The Jets are going to probably have to go somewhere around 60% winning percentage
for the remainder of the season.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, we've talked about really for the last month about how the month of November was going to be a very intense month for the Winnipeg Jets. They had the 16 games in the 29 days. Now that the month of November is over, it'll be over in about an hour and 47 minutes from now, and they're into December, you can look back at November and 7-8-1 is how they finish November with those 16 games in 29 days.
I had 7-7-2, but
is that what you had predicted back?
Well, no, I think there were two overtime losses at the beginning of the month. I'll have
to look back. I mean,
I had it at 7-7-2.
Okay, you might be right. I'll double check and see what it says. I thought it said 7-8-1, but stranger things have happened.
Because they had the overtime loss to Washington and the overtime loss to Colorado.
I think that Washington one was in October still.
No,
maybe you might be right. That sounds.
But regardless, 7-8-1 and 7-7-2, you won 7 of 16. And
right.
So that's not good.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Given the injuries, now that you're out of the month of November, and given the injuries for the Winnipeg Jets that they suffered, given the 16 games in 29 days, did they do enough to sort of tread water?
No.
No?
No. Well, you lost five in a row on the road.
Right.
And you know, you finished strongly here by beating Nashville and New Jersey, but no, you had to win 9 or 10 games. That's what we said. I think if you go back to the beginning of November, we said you ideally want to win 9 or 10 games, not 7. So, I mean, and we know how precious points are, right, Drew? So at the end of the season, I mean, you know, 1 or 2 points can be the difference between making the playoffs. Ask Boston and Detroit last year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, they've started to play better here, and they got big wins before the road trip against Chicago and L.A., but I definitely wouldn't say that November was a success.
I wouldn't say it was a success. I also wouldn't say, if we're using the treading water analogy, that we've submerged our head under the water. I mean, they're 1 point essentially in between 6th and 3rd in the Central with Minnesota, Nashville, and Dallas. So
yeah, but Sean, look at those games in hand Nashville has, though.
Yeah, I don't want to look at that. I don't like that number. I don't like that number one bit. But still, you're in the fight. That's all you can ask for. After a month like that,
you're still in the fight.
And as long as you can somewhat control your own destiny moving forward, you don't have to hope on other teams winning or losing. If you yourself, well, despite that 22, we don't want to forget that number. If you yourself can control pretty much the rest of your season, then I think you've put yourself in a decent spot considering all the circumstances.
Sean is a glass half full guy, apparently, and I don't even know if I have a glass.
I think you drank it already is what happened there. You already drank your glass. 7-7-2, you are correct. So, again, the Red Blacks, the Jets record, is there anything this man doesn't know? We'll talk about the Edmonton.
It's a 1-point difference.
I know, but, you know, I give you credit. You were right, I was wrong. All hail King Ezzy, et cetera, et cetera. When we come back, Jets and Oilers, we'll talk about that matchup that's going to take place tomorrow night. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Cross ice for Tyler Myers, and this game comes to an end. So the Outdoor Classic here at Investors Group Field goes to the Edmonton Oilers. The Edmonton Oilers with 3 unanswered goals in the second period. Cam Talbot stops all 31 shots that the Winnipeg Jets generated as he picks up his first shutout of the season, and the Edmonton Oilers win it by a score of 3-0.
Back in October, the beginning of the year, seems so long ago, the Edmonton Oilers came into IG Field, stole the Heritage Classic, the outdoor game, from the Winnipeg Jets by a 3-0 margin. The Jets look for revenge on home ice tomorrow night as Connor McDavid and the Edmonton Oilers visit again this season. Welcome back to NHL This Week. As you got to give props to a good friend of ours, Frank Zappia. He just tweeted at us. Frank also predicted the Red Blacks to win the Grey Cup. It's a good thing, because this segment, of course, brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, for all your CFL prognostications, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com.
Yeah, shout out to our boy Frank Zappia. I was texting him before the game. He was at the Devils game yesterday.
Yeah, he's always there.
Great minds think alike, Drew.
Yes, exactly. You and Frank, the two of the greatest minds around. Jets and the Oilers tomorrow night. This is an Edmonton Oilers team that, you know, lost last night to the Toronto Maple Leafs, so they might be a little bit surly as they come into Winnipeg. They dropped their third straight game to fall to 12-10-2 on the season. They were flying high earlier in the year. They've certainly come down to earth.
Yep.
Well, everybody except for one guy named Connor McDavid.
Who?
Yeah, who? Vaguely rings a bell, right?
Got called up, right?
Yeah, he called up. He's just up from junior.
Yeah.
12 points in his last 6 games, 6 goals, 6 assists
yep.
for Connor McDavid. You know, I'm excited to see McDavid play in a real environment, because I don't think we fully saw Connor McDavid outdoors at the Heritage Classic, because it's just not a real NHL environment. We're going to see him tomorrow at MTS Center, and I think people are going to be blown away by the Edmonton Oilers superstar.
Yeah, and the bad news for the Winnipeg Jets is he's averaging 1.3 points a game right now, and he has more points than anybody, finally surpassing Mark Scheifele, who had that crown for a while there.
Mm-hmm.
The good news for Jets fans is that the Jets are playing well defensively right now. Connor Hellebuck is playing well, and they're getting Tobias Enstrom back. So it's certainly going to be exciting for fans, guys. You know, Drew, you mentioned the Oilers have lost 3 in a row. Before that, they'd won 3 in a row, and they were scoring quite a bit and picked up wins over some good teams. They'd beat Dallas, Chicago, and Colorado.
Two of those very good teams.
They were averaging 5 goals in those games. So, I mean, this team can score, mm-hmm. and it's not just Connor McDavid. They've got other guys that can put the puck in the net. So it's going to be a big test for the Jets. And, Sean, I don't think that there's going to be any type of impact from the Heritage Classic on this game. That was over a month ago.
Oh, yeah.
As you said, it was an outdoor game, Drew. These two teams have completely gone in different directions. And you could say that the Jets have gone a little bit sideways, whereas the Oilers have kind of gone down a little bit. At one point, the Oilers were leading the Western Conference. Right now, they're kind of in the middle of the pack of the playoff teams. They've lost a lot of ground there. So, you know, it's a big test again. And to me, what's been probably the most surprising, Sean, about the Oilers is the way they've played defensively. And I got to give credit to Oscar Klefbom and Adam Larson. That top pair for the Oilers have been really good. So I would imagine that they're going to match up against the Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers line. And another thing for the Jets, aside from Leon Draisaitl, they're not a very good faceoff team.
The Oilers, you're saying?
Right. So I would expect, you know, with the Jets having last change, Connor McDavid's not having a good time in the faceoff circle as well. He's at about 43%. So I would expect Scheifele's line to go right up against Connor McDavid's line. And I would expect Dustin Byfuglien and Josh Morrissey to be paired up against the McDavid pairing, the McDavid line. And if not, it would be Sherratt and Trouba. But regardless, Jets do have the advantage of last change. And, you know, it's not going to be an easy game. But certainly going into this game, I think that the Jets are playing a lot better and feeling a lot better about themselves than they were after that road trip.
Sure. You look at the last couple games and the shutout against Nashville. You give up 2 goals against the New Jersey Devils, but I mean, obviously one of those was that terrible goal. So, I mean, I think you're probably pretty happy with your defensive game against the New Jersey Devils. And now you know what you have to do with the Oilers. And it starts with trying to slow down Connor McDavid and his line mates, because it really doesn't matter who his line mates are. Usually they're Milan Lucic, and it's been sort of a rotating cast on the right side there. But you know you have to start with them, because the Oilers, for the most part, their third and fourth lines, there's not a ton of offense coming from those guys for the most part. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle obviously can still play. I think it's been about a month since Benoit Pouliot had a goal or a point for the Oilers.
I was
Oilers.
Looking at that before the show. He's gone 14 games without a point.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
It's hard to believe that you can do that. You would think that just you would fall backwards into a point. That's
just throw the puck at Connor McDavid and let him do whatever he does.
It is hard to believe that he can go that 14 games playing on a team with Connor McDavid and not pick up a secondary assist somewhere along the way. But for the Jets, it really does come down to you feel confident in your chances if you can slow down Connor McDavid. And, of course, the problem with that is that's every team's strategy in the entire NHL. And all the guy does is put up points, 31 points so far this season in only 24 games played. I mean, if he's not the best player in the league, if you're still going to go with Sidney Crosby, it's probably a conversation between the two.
Yeah, Sean, and the Oilers are one of those teams, if you shut down the top line, I mean, your chances of winning are much better as opposed to some other teams, whether it's a team like the Washington Capitals, who the Jets had trouble with, which have much more depth and can really throw out 3 good scoring lines. So I agree, Drew. I mean, you're talking about right now a guy who's on pace to hit 100 points, and you know, we only had one 100-point score last year, and there's a good chance that we're going to see several this year. We're going to get into that later. But, this Oilers team, I mean, again, I think they are coming back to life. I didn't think that they were going to continue to kind of play at this pace. Certainly, they don't get a lot of offense from the defense, even though Adam Larson has been playing well defensively. Mm-hmm. He's only got 2 goals in 24 games. So, your chances get a lot better if you keep McDavid off the score sheet, which is easier said than done.
Yeah, this is going to look more like a traditional hockey game than the last time the Oilers were in town. It was kind of a circus, you know, the week leading up to it, and then all the alumni. And this Nick Ehlers talked about it today. Actually, he was asked about the difference in the game he expects, and he talked about the ice surface and the atmosphere and all the guests that the Jets had. And I don't think the Jets have forgotten that the Oilers came in here and ruined the party.
Sure.
I think they have not forgot that, and it's going to be really interesting. For me, puck management is so crucial against the Oilers, because they are a counter-punching team, and they hit you fast.
Yeah, that's a good
point.
You
throw the puck through the middle of the ice, like we've seen some of our players do recently. The players, pardon me. I'll get better.
It's okay.
I'll throw an example. The Patrick Laine backhand saucer pass through the middle that we've kind of seen him throw a couple of game through the middle that are easily picked off. You throw one of those to Connor McDavid, he's gone. Your team is standing still, he's gone. He's in your zone within a matter of a millisecond, and now you're scrambling. Mm-hmm. So taking care of the puck is crucial. Getting it deep is even more important, and not allowing them to use their speed to counter your turnovers in the neutral zone is critical. Paul Maurice talked about it. He said, speed is great, but you can't use your speed if you don't have the puck. So I think what we're going to see from the Jets is maybe a bit of a grind down low style, less ticky-tacky plays through the ice, more simple, get it deep, neutralize their speed, and go from there.
And the Jets are probably okay with that because they would totally. Say, you know, we have an advantage. If our forwards are going in on the Oilers' defense, that's a matchup we like. Because mm-hmm. the Oilers' defense, yes, it's better than in past seasons, but it's certainly not a Norris Trophy. There's no Norris Trophy candidates on that defense.
It's a lot better than it was last year.
Yeah, which isn't saying much. I mean,
sure. I know what you're saying, though, Drew. It's not. I wouldn't even say it's a top 10 defense, but it's certainly not a bottom 5 defense anymore. To Sean's point, and Sean made some really good points there. I think the style of this game is going to be a lot different than the style we saw last night against the Devils. A few things to keep in mind about this game, though. The Oilers are a much more physical team than you think. They're 5th in the league in hits. The Jets are 4th, and the Oilers, as you mentioned at the beginning of the segment, Drew, they're coming off 3 straight losses, so I think they're going to be pretty desperate here. I would expect this to be a little bit of a chippy game, more chippy in the physical sense as opposed to more chippy in the sense that there were just a lot of, I think, loose plays along the boards in last night's game against the Devils. And the other thing that I think is a motivation for a guy like Patrick Laine is that he's going up against Jesse Puljujärvi.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And we know that he went 4th overall after Columbus decided to go with Pierre-Luc Dubois, but those guys, you got to think, get up for playing against each other. They're both 18 years old. They're both rookies. Puljujärvi's obviously struggled. He's only got 1 goal as opposed to Laine, who's got 13. But I think that those guys, maybe they're even talking before the game, talking about how their season's gone thus far. But I think that those guys get up for playing against each other. You saw that with McDavid against Matthews.
Sure. I mean, I'm certain that they would. They probably grew up together playing hockey in Finland, so there's no reason why the first time, besides the Winter Classic, the first time in a real setting, they wouldn't want to. There's a little extra motivation there. And, I'm sure for the Jets, they do remember what happened at the Winter Classic. And they want to, anytime you're playing against the best, and that's what Connor McDavid is, he's the best, that's your measuring stick. That's your barometer. That's the guy that you know that, if he's the elite of the elite, I'm going to find extra motivation to go up against that kind of
guy.
And
same thing with Scheifele and McDavid, right? Because they're actually going head-to-head in the face-off circle.
You would expect so. Exactly right. That those two guys, they look at each other. They know who's, up the top of the NHL in scoring.
I do think that they might want to get Little, though, up against McDavid.
I was thinking that too.
Because of the face-off advantage. And we've even seen the Adam Lowry, Marco Dano, Brandon Tanev line be a checking line for the Jets. So I think, the Oilers are an easier team to match up against than certainly the Predators or even the Devils, I think.
Well, the Jets, you have to neutralize Connor McDavid's speed. Because like you said, Sean, if he gets the puck with speed going through the neutral zone, he's so quick.
It's crazy.
You almost can't react. And the Jets have a lot of players who are very skilled, have excellent hockey sense and can react very quickly. But Connor McDavid's a whole separate animal that you probably haven't seen on a regular basis.
Yeah, guys, it's almost like LeBron James or Steph Curry in the NBA right now. You know that those guys are going to get points. You just have to limit the damage. McDavid, as we said, is averaging 1.3 points a game. The only other guy that's averaging that is Sidney Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
So most likely he is going to get at least a goal or at least an assist, and you have to just make sure that he doesn't do too much damage.
That's right. You minimize the damage he's going to inflict. Let's head to break. When we come back, Dave Jamieson from our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton, joins us to talk more about the Oilers. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca.
Shortly past the bottom of the hour, you're listening to a late night edition of NHL This Week. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you in studio. You can reach us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Dave Jamieson. Dave is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton, our sister station. Dave, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be with you guys.
Our pleasure, as always, Dave. Of course, we brought you on to talk about the Edmonton Oilers. They make their second trip of the season to Winnipeg to face the Jets tomorrow night. We have to start with Connor McDavid. I mean, he's, you know, shocking, I'm sure, that we start with Connor McDavid.
Yeah.
I mean, the numbers are crazy. The highlights, night in, night out. Uh-huh. You know, for your money, and this is you're a guy who watches him every night. Has he overtaken Sidney Crosby as the best player in the league?
Oh, look, I you know, I should jump and immediately say yes, he has. Look, that would be disregarding the body of work that Sidney Crosby's built to this point in his career, and he's still doing great stuff. And I think Connor McDavid, if he were asked that, would say absolutely not. Look, what, and I said this today on my show, last night in a loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs, Connor McDavid scores a goal where he gets separation on Morgan Riley, who's a very good skating defenseman, and it didn't look fair. It looked like somebody in a fast car passing, you know, me on the highway. I mean, it was so quick, it was so effortless, and, you know, look, Connor McDavid, I'm sure, you know, he needs to fill out parts of his game. So, you know, I would say no, he hasn't overtaken Sidney Crosby, but he's really close. And, I mean, anybody who watches hockey should go, great, I'm going to be watching a guy evolve and get better for many years to come. So, you know, he's not the finished product yet. It sure feels like it, but as anybody who, you know, knows and has watched the game at this level, there's lots of layers before you get to the Crosby status.
Dave, now that Connor McDavid's got that C on his sweater, how have you seen him change both on and off the ice?
Well, it's funny because the time of my show, I'm not down at the skates, but you know, you can judge a player by, you know, the short clips we see in the media, and that's one to judge them on. We'll never know what he's like in the room. I can't imagine, given what, you know, we've seen of him as a personality, that he is given to the fiery speech, the, you know, rally around the troops, rally around the Oiler logo, that kind of stuff. I mean, he leads by being the best player on his team, and on some nights he's the best player, on many nights he's the best player on both teams on the ice. You know, he's still a teenager. He's 19 years old, and I mean, he's obviously older than his years would indicate, but at the end of the day, you know, he's finding his way. You know, he's got to go, you know, now as a captain and as the star of the team and the face of the franchise and one of the faces of the league, he's now has to go out and make appearances and do some things that might be, you know, a little bit out of his comfort zone. But this is a guy who was an academic player of the year in the Ontario Hockey League. I mean, he's smart, obviously. He is very composed, and even, you know, when he's going through the rough stuff on the ice, like Nazem Kadri last night and in the previous meeting with the Toronto Maple Leafs, he's tough. He played him hard. And McDavid, you can see that, you know, he may be frustrated on some level, never loses his cool. He's always poised. And, you know, that's the thing I think that, I mean, there's so many different things that he does so well and that would make you want to, you know, heap praise on him. But his composure, and he never lets anything, I mean, be it the media scrum or, you know, Nazem Kadri, throw him off his game.
Dave, you know, when we preview these matchups, we like to look at the previous game and the last time these two teams met. But obviously, the last time the Oilers and the Jets met, it was the Heritage Classic here in Winnipeg. Can we even use that game as a barometer as to where these teams match up against each other entering tomorrow, considering, you know, all the circumstances that were involved with that game?
Look, I would say no, because look, the Oilers have come through a difficult stretch. They lost two to Arizona. home and away, and then they lost to the Leafs last night. And they should have beaten the Coyotes, certainly one of the two, and likely both of those games. The Toronto Maple Leafs are, frankly, a wild card. They played well last night. They lose tonight in Calgary. So call that a saw-off. The Oilers have struggled, you know, in the month of November, but they are a team finding their way. So as excited as everyone was with the way they started and some of the teams they've beaten, St. Louis and Chicago and Washington, so they've got some, you know, they've got some big game hunting under their belt. They've done some good stuff to this point, but then, you know, a critic of the team would look at what they did last night and the last couple of games and say, wait a minute, let's not start, you know, planning routes and for parades and any of that stuff. So I don't think what happened in the Heritage Classic, which is such a unique spectacle, I'd be reluctant to take a lot out of that meeting. You know, you got Patrick Laine for the Winnipeg Jets. I mean, I don't need to tell you guys, and you've got Mark Scheifele, and you've got a number of other young player superstars in the making, if they're not there already. You know, it's two teams that are still, again, determining who they're going to be and how they're going to go about their business. And, the Oilers are I had on my show out of Toronto said they're must-see hockey. They are appointment viewing. And I think that can be some nights good and you'll be very excited. And then some nights you'll wish you hadn't tuned in because they'll confuse and disappoint Oilers fans.
Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde rolled into one. Our guest is Dave Jamieson. Dave has a program on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. He joins us to talk about the Oilers ahead of their visit to Winnipeg tomorrow night. Dave, when we were previewing the game last segment, we expressed disbelief that Benoit Pouliot can go 14 games without even registering a secondary assist. What is the attitude in Edmonton regarding Mr. Pouliot and his recent struggles?
Well, let me put it to you this way. If they were selling Benoit Pouliot pinatas in a store, they'd be a hot, hot item. Because when a team goes through difficulty, you know, the way the Oilers have during periods of this, early in the season, there's always going to be that guy. And Benoit Pouliot earlier in the season was taking bad penalties. So that, you know, put him in the crosshairs for fans. And his coach, Todd McLellan, who after one game was very critical of him and pulled no punches. Now he's, to compound things, he's not getting the bad penalties. He's just not scoring. And so if Benoit Pouliot is not scoring, and he's not really helping you in any other way, the question is being asked and should be asked is, what is exactly is it that he is doing on any given night? And he, you know, Carey, he's a veteran, carries a pretty good price tag for certainly for what he's delivering. And so naturally, he's going to be the guy who is, in the middle of the fans' discontent. I should say also that Jordan Eberle is starting to nudge his way into becoming, if not, at the middle of the criticism, certainly a guy who's, right there beside Benoit Pouliot, because a lot of people, and rightly so, expect a great deal more out of Jordan Eberle. They expect a lot more offensive production, but what I find interesting is that fans now are, and maybe this is a byproduct of the team being better than it has been for pretty much every year that Jordan Eberle is here, is they're demanding more out of Jordan Eberle as a player. You know, his defensive responsibility comes under criticism. I mean, there's no doubt the guy has world-class hands. He has an ability to, and certainly in close, to do some very creative things and score a lot. But now people are saying, well, wait a minute, he didn't pick up his check on this particular play. They're looking more critically at that. And it's those two guys right now. I mean, I would give, if there's a title in this race, I would give it to Pouliot because of his lack of offensive production. But, Jordan Eberle, again, carries a big price tag. And fans, and I would imagine management, want some return on that.
Dave, Edmonton Oilers goaltender Cam Talbot, he started 22 of 24 games. He's on pace to start more games than he's ever started. How would you assess his play in the first quarter of the season in his second year as an Edmonton Oiler?
Other than the game against Buffalo, which was a tough outing earlier in the year, and that was at home, and there was a, you know, he gave up a very bad goal, and it was just a bad night. It was one of those forgettable games. I think he's been outstanding. His wife gave birth to twins. You know, he was a little unsteady in the early, you know, two, three, four games of the season. But, you know, knowing what was coming in his personal life, I think you can probably forgive him a little bit. But he's been really, you know, what's interesting is Oiler goaltending has not been a storyline, which might tell you about the work that he's done. I mean, he's been excellent. And, you know, people who maybe thought the Oilers took a bit of a flyer in getting him from the New York Rangers. I mean, he had a good run when he replaced Henrik Lundqvist. You know, they're thinking, okay, this guy's never been a starter. The fact that he started as many games as he has so far, to me, I would keep running him, and listeners to my show have said, well, you know, no, you can't do that. My example, Exhibit A, is Braden Holtby. You know, the Capitals have no issue with playing him pretty much every night. They've got a better goaltender now in Jonas Gustafsson, a backup goaltender in Jonas Gustafsson, so there's a little bit of security there that the Oilers haven't had for a couple of years. So, you know, Cam Talbot, to my mind, has not been an issue, which tells me he's either been good or in some cases great.
What have you seen out of Milan Lucic as of late? You know, there were some inconsistencies at the beginning of the season. He seems to really have settled in as of late. What are your thoughts on the big bruising forward?
Well, he's a big bruising forward who comes as advertised. I think for some fans who thought that, you know, the Oilers were signing a very expensive attack dog, that's not what they're getting. You're getting a hulking presence in front of the net. At times, not certainly every game, you know, Milan Lucic looks as if he is slower than, but everybody's slower than Connor McDavid. I mean, who are we kidding?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know of many players who can, but it's not about keeping pace with McDavid. It's about knowing where to go when he, you know, and finding spots and going to the right places. But he has been, you know, I think, I believe largely is advertised. Again, you know, and this is where we sit now, and certainly in pro hockey and the NHL level and maybe all of sports, is we'll look at a player's contribution and then we quickly look to see what they're making. And if the two numbers don't, in our mind, jive, then someone will say, well, they've overpaid. I don't, you know, I think Milan Lucic has given the Oilers what they expected. And I don't know anybody, at least I didn't, and having watched him as a Bruin and briefly as a Los Angeles King, I think he's doing, you know, he's a net presence. He is a nuclear deterrent should anything go sideways. And some people feel that, you know, he should be riding around like a pilot fish on the side of Connor McDavid. And if anyone looks at McDavid sideways, then he responds, well, I don't know if that's particularly smart hockey. It's old hockey, but it's not the way the game's played now.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question. And obviously having Connor McDavid on your roster, you know, covers up a lot of ills. But mm-hmm. I'm looking at the Oilers' third and fourth lines, and I'm looking at their depth, and I'm looking at their AHL franchise in Bakersfield, which is at the bottom of the Pacific Division. Is this team still a few seasons away and a number of sort of quote-unquote depth players from truly being not contenders but truly being, you know, playoff threats in the Western Conference?
Yes, and I didn't want to answer too quickly, but yeah, I mean, you know, you're right. I mean, McDavid will cover some sins, a lot of them. I mean, he, you know, on any given night, and they are better defensively. They're better in goal. You know, Talbot is better this year than he was last year. The addition of Chris Russell has been really, you know, very, very good, and I think it caught some people by surprise, although it probably shouldn't. Adam Larson has been excellent. I know people will say, well, you know, boy, they could sure use Taylor Hall. I mean, any team would say they would like Taylor Hall, but Adam Larson has given the Oilers a dimension they haven't had. The other thing is Oscar Klefbom is healthy, and they haven't really had to say that very many times, or, you know, during his time in the NHL. But no, I think to your point is, you know, it's they've got considerable assets, but again, you go to depth, and what can you get out of your third and your fourth line on any night? And when you're trying to rebuild a franchise, it's not just about the team and the NHL. It's what do you got coming below that's either going to push or replace or, you know, that in the event of injury, you can go to. I mean, one of the great stories this year, well, there's two. There's, you know, maybe even more than that other than McDavid, is the play of Tyler Pitlick. And, you know, the play of Benning on defense. I mean, these are young players, and the owners, you know, haven't historically, until Chiarelli took over, been able to point to a lot of made-in-Edmonton solutions, either players they've drafted or acquired. And so, you know, they're on the early, you know, start of building a truly Oiler system as opposed to just the NHL team.
Dave Jamieson is the host of the Dave Jamieson Show on our sister station, TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dave, always appreciate your time and your insight into the Oilers. Thanks very much for joining us.
Take care, guys.
You too, Dave. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we look at the NHL standings at U.S. Thanksgiving, which just passed. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
Home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Not a single one of the seven Canadian teams made the playoffs last year, but the numbers suggest that won't happen again. Over the past 10 seasons, 76% of teams in a playoff spot on American Thanksgiving went on to make the playoffs. So the Habs, Oilers, and Sens are all looking good. There is a silver lining for the four Canadian teams sitting on the outside looking in now, though. Last season, the Flyers overcame a six-point deficit to make the playoffs. So the Jets, Flames, Canucks, and Leafs are all still well within striking distance.
U.S. Thanksgiving having come and gone last week, and of course we all know that that is a key milestone on the NHL calendar as it pertains to making the playoffs. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information or to make an appointment, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So, gents, U.S. Thanksgiving came and went last Thursday. Let me start with this question. Do you think this whole U.S. Thanksgiving thing is overblown, or do you think there's some fairly legitimate validity to it?
No, there's definitely some validity to it, Drew, but for me this year, it's been a little bit overblown simply because the season started late.
Sure.
Because of the World Cup. So I think really you have to push American Thanksgiving a week, don't you?
Theoretically.
Because it's based on, I believe, I mean, I realize it's over the years, but especially the 2014 year, the season started earlier.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it was October 1st that year, and it started October 13th this year. But regardless, I think the point is that it's after, you know, the 22-23 game mark, right?
Which is
kind
where
of the quarter point
at
of the season, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's absolutely validity to it, guys. But every year, I mean, the percentages are, say, basically 1 in 5 teams 20%. It's not 1 in 5 teams. 20% of the teams that are behind that line can make it. So, I mean, that tells you that there's a good chance that maybe one team that isn't in a playoff spot, right, if you kind of look at it like that. Certainly teams that are now 6 or 7 points out of it don't have a good chance. So yeah. You're talking about in the East, teams like the Islanders and the Sabres, or in the West, you're talking about the Arizona Coyotes, right, or even the Calgary Flames right now aren't looking too good. So, even though that they won tonight. But certainly right now, I mean, the Jets are what, 1 point out of a playoff spot? And sure, you know, we were talking about it the first segment, and, you know, Sean made the point that he didn't think that November was maybe a step back, more so it was just treading water. And for this Jets team, I mean, if they go on a run here, I mean, put it this way, Drew, if the Jets beat Edmonton tomorrow night and even are able to pick up 3 of 4 points against St. Louis and Chicago on the road, then you've got points in 4 or 5 games, and you're most likely going to be in a playoff spot, right? Things can change very quickly. So it's November. The season is not over. And, sorry, it's almost December.
Sure, but it's still November for another hour and 5 minutes. You're right about that. Sean, your thoughts on the U.S. Thanksgiving benchmark?
I mean, just looking at the teams, there's definitely some validity. I mean, do you expect these top teams in essentially every single division to slide.
Well, let me go through it right now. So as of U.S. Thanksgiving, or we can even do it as of today because it hasn't changed dramatically in the last, you know, 5 days, 6 days. In the Western Conference, there is only one team that is currently in a playoff spot this season that didn't make the playoffs last year.
Oilers.
That's the Edmonton Oilers, yep, who are currently in a playoff spot. The Dallas Stars are currently out of the playoffs, and they were, of course, the winners of the Central Division last year. The Stars have been struggling so far this season.
Right, so let me stop you right there, Drew.
The Dallas Stars are making the playoffs.
Yes, and they're healthy now. Cody Eakin is back. Patrick Sharp is back. Yuri Hudler is still out with some mystery illness that nobody knows what it is. But certainly they're pretty healthy now.
Mm-hmm.
And Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin started off pretty slowly, and now Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin are, you know, top 10 in the league in scoring. So Dallas is making the playoffs. I mean, I've made some wrong predictions. By the way, was I a year late on the Columbus Blue Jackets?
You were a year late.
Pardon me, a year early.
You were a year early, and a coach firing yeah, early. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't think any one of us picked Gerard Gallant to win head coach of the year, even though he was a Jack Adams finalist last year. But let's be honest, guys. I mean, if the Jets are going to beat out a team, and if it's not Dallas, it's going to be one of Minnesota or Nashville. Nashville is starting to play a lot better right now, but it's going to be tough. I did the numbers, Drew. I tweeted this out a couple days ago. 87 points got you into the playoffs last year in the West, right?
Okay.
The year before, I believe it was high 90s.
Yeah, the year before it was the Jets made it as the second wild card team with, I believe, 99 right. points.
Okay, so if we were basing making the playoffs on 87 points,
yeah,
and based on the Jets' record, and this wasn't including last night's win over the Devils, but I basically said that the Jets would have to win 60% of their games. So I think the record was something like 30-22-5. So the winning percentage, they have to win essentially 30 of their last 58 games. They have 57 games left now.
Yeah.
But and that's doable. So, I mean, the Jets can
do it. But it's a – I mean,
it's a challenge.
It's a challenge.
They have to be better on the road, and they have to be better against the East.
Well, I mean, you know, based on your numbers, they would have to win – you know, you have to win. If you want to be confident about making the playoffs, you have to win, as in get a W, in at least half the games you play.
Right.
I mean, that's the minimum benchmark where you're, for the most part. I mean, sure, you can do it if you win 39 games and then you get 15, you know, overtime losses or something where you get the loser point. But if you really want to start in, you know, on your benchmark, you got to say, I want to go 41, 31, and 10, you know, which is really 40, which is only a winning percentage of 500. And that's going to give you, you know, close to 92 points in. Usually you're going to be in the running. You're going to be in a pretty good spot at that point in time.
And the good news, Sean, for the Jets right now is it looks like there's still a good chance that five teams from the Central make it.
Yeah.
And I realize LA's played a little bit better lately, but last year and the year before, five teams from the Central made it. So that's optimistic for the Jets, right? And they've been playing very well at home, and they just haven't been able to put it together on the road. So I think if you look at it like that, and you have to look at it at kind of at two, three, four games at a time, I think they look at it more like one game at a time.
Sure.
But certainly from an analytical perspective, you have to look at it like that and say, well, if the Jets in the next three games can win two of those three games.
Well, if you go 0-5 and then you win 4 out of 5, well, it really softens the blow of your 0-5. The problem is if you go 0-5 and then you go 2 out of 5, that's when your problems really begin to compound themselves. And that's what happened last season when you're losing, you know, 2 out of every 3 games you play. That's you know, you're really putting yourself behind an 8-ball. Quickly, before the top of the hour, over to the Eastern Conference, lots of changes. 4 teams that were in the playoffs last season are no longer in the playoffs. Those 4 teams are the Philadelphia Flyers, the Florida Panthers, who we'll talk about next segment, the Detroit Red Wings, and the New York Islanders, who have been absolutely woeful this season. The 4 teams that have replaced them in the playoffs, the aforementioned Columbus Blue Jackets, the Jets' opponent last night, the New Jersey Devils, and both the Montreal Canadiens and the Ottawa Senators.
We should mention, Drew, that the Flyers, Bruins, and Devils are all tied with 25 points right now, but the Devils have 2 games in hand on the Flyers. So, I mean, certainly the biggest surprise team there for me is Columbus.
They have been terrific, really. They're 12-5-4. There's a reason why we had Aaron Portsline on Saturday's show. The Jets don't play the Blue Jackets until, I think, close to the end of December. The Blue Jackets are under the radar still, but one of the most interesting and most surprising stories of the 2016-17 NHL season.
I think so. Sergei Bobrovsky's playing really well. They beat Tampa Bay on the road 5-1 last night. Tampa Bay is a good team.
Yeah.
Tampa Bay might be a Stanley Cup finalist.
They were my Stanley Cup champion, I believe, in the preseason show.
Well, you get Steven Stamkos back for the playoffs, and yeah. The way Nikita Kucherov is playing right now, Tyler Johnson's having a bounce back year. Victor Hedman is being Victor Hedman, one of the top defensemen in the league. So,
well,
I mean, the East is always down to the last week. We saw it last year with Boston and Detroit, Philadelphia, New Jersey. Even Toronto's not that far back.
No, Toronto's not that far back. They lost in Calgary tonight 3-0. So let's go to break. When we come back, we'll do a score update of the three games that were in action today in the NHL, and we'll talk about the Florida Panthers and their firing of head coach Gerard Gallant. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
We felt, you know, one game we played really well. You know, last night, first period was the best period of the year, and then second period we collapsed and, you know, lost the game in the second period. So I think that was, you know, what drove it.
Bro also talked about his leaving the press box for the dressing room.
The advantage I have coming in from sitting up in the press box, you know, the first 20 games is to kind of point it out, maybe give a little different message to the guys and maybe, you know, attack things with some new ideas. And
103 points only gets you so far in the NHL. That's what the Florida Panthers had last year under head coach Gerard Gallant. Doesn't do him any good this year, despite an injury-riddled team, despite having that team 11-10-1 through the first 22 games of the season. He was given his walking papers, fired as Florida Panthers head coach, replaced by general manager Tom Rowe. Welcome back to NHL This Week here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. So, gentlemen, you could have made some money if you had predicted that Gerard Gallant was going to be the first head coach fired this year in the NHL. The Panthers lose to the Carolina Hurricanes earlier this week. I believe it was on Sunday night, if I'm not mistaken. And immediately after the game, Gallant is fired by the Panthers. And the now iconic image of him standing on the corner along with assistant head coach Mike Kelly waiting for a taxi to take him to the airport is going to be one that I think to some extent haunts the Florida Panthers organization going forward.
Are we sure it wasn't an Uber?
Apparently they had called for a quote-unquote car. Okay. And they thought it was going to be a fancier car, maybe a town car, maybe a sedan of some sort. I'm not 100% sure.
It was a Ford Windstar.
But it ended up being an old yellow taxi, which sort of adds an extra layer of humor to the, a bit of gallows humor, if you will, to the situation.
Yeah, Drew, I think at that point, Gerard Gallant really doesn't care about what kind of car he's going to be traveling in. I think he just wants to get the hell out of there.
He just wants the guy behind him to stop taking pictures of him standing on the street corner waiting.
I mean, there's no need for that. I mean, let's talk about the firing here, okay?
Okay.
We just talked about the Eastern Conference, Drew.
Yeah.
And you look at the Florida Panthers' record. It's 11-10-2 for 24 points. They're 1 point behind the Devils, who are holding on to that last wild card spot in the Eastern Conference. So it's not like the Florida Panthers are completely out of it here. I mean, look at where the Florida Panthers are, Drew. They won the division last year.
Mm-hmm.
They get knocked out in the first round.
Yeah.
This is a team that had aspirations, or still does. I shouldn't say past tense had. I mean, this team still wants to go far in the playoffs. And, you know, we were talking about our Stanley Cup predictions last segment. I predicted it was going to be a Dallas-Florida final. And, you know, it's not looking too good on either side. Dallas is starting to play a little bit better, but certainly Dallas has not had the start that they want either. But, you know, you look at the Florida Panthers and they don't have Jonathan Huberdeau right now. He's been out for the entire season. They don't have Nick Bjugstad.
Yeah.
They've had other
Bjugstad's
players.
Bjugstad's actually back in the lineup, but just
sorry,
back in
the lineup.
He just
came back. Sorry, that's right, Drew. Alexander Barkov has struggled. Yarmir Yager has struggled. There have been, I don't know what struggled means, by the way. Yager has struggled.
Yeah.
He led the team in scoring last year.
Yeah.
There have been bright spots. Jonathan Marchessault was a fantastic signing. But as a whole, they have been inconsistent. And similar to the Winnipeg Jets right now, they're kind of one of those middling teams right in the middle of the pack. They're not in danger of missing the playoffs yet because there's a lot of hockey to be played. But I look at this, you know, move, and I'm surprised as much as the next guy. And especially because Gerard Gallant was given a 3-year contract extension last year. So he has 2 years left after this year, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And the Florida Panthers are on the hook for that. So it's certainly surprising when you consider how good they were last year and the expectations that were put on them by themselves and by others based on the way they played. So very surprising move, Drew. I mean, I can't say if it's right or wrong. And I realize that, you know, there have been, you know, murmurs that this was because Gerard Gallant wouldn't accept or maybe...
He wouldn't embrace the same style of play that the front office was.
Right, and you know what? I mean, at the end of the day, coaches are hired and fired because of wins and losses, Drew. So maybe analytics were at play here a little bit, but obviously they didn't like where the team was going. They wanted to go in a different direction.
Well, I mean, the part that doesn't make sense to me, well, there's a couple things. One, if he's not your guy, you knew he wasn't your guy back in the offseason. So make the change then, and you start fresh as opposed to doing it now, which is... a point in time where you can really potentially sabotage your entire season, the manner in which this was handled.
Keep in mind, Drew, Tom Rowe didn't hire Gerard Gallant.
I know. It's a different regime that hired him. But if he's not your guy, I have trouble believing you just found out 20 games into the year that now he's not your guy. You probably knew back then he wasn't your guy. So, you know, for the betterment of your own team... You know, if you come out in the off season and you fire him in July or you fire him in August or whatever and say, Gerard did a great job, but going forward, we didn't have the same vision. We're going to make this change now. I think everybody says, oh, okay, that's sort of lousy, but they move on with it. It's not a big deal. Doing it the way they did it, where they give the guy 20 games, you know, of an injury-riddled team, he does a pretty damn good job in keeping that team above water. And then because he loses one random game to the Carolina Hurricanes, that's when you take him out back?
Well, I, we'll get Sean in here too, but I don't think this was just based on that one game. I agree with you, Drew. I think that there were some differences before the season even started. How do you fire a guy in the offseason when he was a Jack Adams finalist and the team won the division? What are you basing that on?
How do you fire him 22 games in the season when he's got your team one game above 500 and you've been injury riddled?
No, I agree with you. I'm a big fan of Gerard Gallant. He was a good assistant with the Montreal Canadiens.
Sure.
By the way, he was a really good player for the Detroit Red Wings before that. I mean, this guy knows hockey. So, I mean, he was a Jack Adams finalist. How many times do you see a guy who almost wins Coach of the Year get fired 20 games into the next year?
If they beat the Hurricanes 3-2, if they end up, you know, let's say they blow that 2-goal lead, but they end up winning 3-2, does this still happen? I mean, it reeks of panic. And it reeks of, it's just an unfair move doing it in the manner and the timing in which they did it. If you're going to do it, that's fine. But as you're going to hear from Bob McKenzie and Jamie McLennan coming up in a couple minutes here, the timing of it and the circumstances around it and the visuals of it all are what really are the worst part of this for the Florida Panthers organization.
Well, the visuals are haunting. If you are a coach looking for work in the NHL, and you get a phone call from the Florida Panthers, hey, we want you to embrace our new system. This is what we're thinking. We like your mentality when it comes to the game. Okay, so they hire X as their new coach, and he's having a great first period a year into the season, and then they have a terrible second period. Now you have to think to yourself, well, is my job on the line right now? And, you know, it's a different style, a different mentality. I'm sure they didn't agree with Gallant. But Ezzy brought up a really good point about how they're on the cusp of the playoffs right now. And Gallant was notorious. He was very well respected and well liked by the players. That was well known around the hockey community. And it's interesting for me to think that when your team is on the cusp of being in the postseason and the slightest thing can derail this entire season, you fire the beloved coach. And it's going to be really interesting to me to see how this team responds, regardless of who they hire.
They lost in the shootout, pardon me, last night in Chicago. So if you want to take a one-game sample, sure, they're happy that they got the 1 point in Chicago. But you're absolutely right. It will be interesting to see how this new strategy and the new coaching staff is embraced by the players there in Florida. For the most part, I think the relationship between coaches and players is a little overblown. I think players will play for whoever they, is coaching them. They want a paycheck, unless the guy's an absolute tyrant and it becomes a completely poisonous situation. But I think for the most part, players know their job and they're going to go and do it regardless of who the bench boss is. They'll say, yeah, it's unfair, but they'll probably, forget, I'm putting that in air quotes, they'll forget about Gerard Gallant pretty quickly.
Yeah, and I wanted to say one thing too, Drew. We mentioned, Alexander Barkov's got 2 goals in 23 games. You look at Aaron Ekblad, he's got 6 goals and 1 assist. He's struggled defensively more so. Other players on the team have struggled. We mentioned Jaromir Jagr, and obviously Jonathan Huberdeau, not having him in the lineup really hurts them. But also, to me, it's the way the defense have played. And I think they miss Brian Campbell. I think they miss Eric Gudbranson. I think they miss some of those veterans that were on the blue line. And, they brought in a guy like Keith Yandle, who's more offensively oriented. He hasn't been terrific. I mean, they expected more offense from him. So I think that right now they're not playing as well as a unit defensively. And, Luongo has started to play more than James Reimer now. He was injured towards the beginning of the season. James Reimer has struggled quite a bit. He was lit up by the Toronto Maple Leafs when he was in Toronto. So I think this team, has room to grow here. I'd still be surprised if they end up missing the playoffs, though. I think there's way too much talent on this team that they can't make the playoffs this year.
You mentioned the back end, and that's really where they did a great deal of an overhaul in the offseason. Brian Campbell left as an unrestricted free agent. Fine. We don't know if he was offered a contract. We don't know that situation. But they traded Dmitry Kulikov to the Buffalo Sabres, and then they traded Eric Gudbranson to the Vancouver Canucks. I still think that's a good trade, because I think Jared McCann is going to be a better player than Eric Gudbranson is on the long term. But right now in the short term, you heard that it was a front office move that Gerard Gallant liked what Gudbranson brought to the table with his physicality and everything else. And maybe that was the first sign of cracks in the thinking, in the philosophy, and in the disagreement between the front office and the head coach. Panthers will be a fascinating thing to watch for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
They really will, because I think there's probably a lot of people in the hockey world. I mean, I don't want to get into the analytics versus traditional hockey argument, because it's been done to death over and over and over again, and nobody really cares anymore at this point. But that will be an interesting one, because I think there's going to be a lot of sniping behind the scenes if the Florida Panthers and their new bold strategy doesn't pay off for the remainder of the season. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL This Week. When we come back, we're going to look at the 2016-17 Art Ross Trophy race. Is this one of the best points races that we've seen in the past few seasons?
Yes.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One-on-one against Theodore. He makes a move.
Crosby, Kane, Shifley, other names you can throw in there, Kucherov, Sagan, Tarasenko, the best of the best at the top of the NHL scoring race, one quarter of the way through the 2016-17 NHL season. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com or check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
There's going to be tons of Connor McDavid jerseys tomorrow night at MTS Center.
You think?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, last time the Jets were here, the Oilers were here. it's 11:20 at night, Drew.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
It's been a long day.
I don't know. Did you take a nap?
Well,
I meant to ask you, did you take a nap?
No.
No nap?
No.
Going strong.
I'm always concerned that if I take a nap around 7 or 8 o'clock at night that I'm not going to wake up.
Yeah, that's, you know, they do have things called alarms nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know,
but then you wake up tired and...
It's all about controlling the minutes you sleep.
Again, the nap, I think we had this conversation off air last Tuesday night when we did another late show. What you were calling a nap, most people would call a sleep. A nap is 30 to 45 minutes, I would say. Maybe you're pushing
I disagree. A
maybe
nap,
you're pushing it to an hour. Most people would not say a nap lasts 2 to 3 hours.
I disagree. I think you can have a power nap, which is 15 minutes to 45 minutes, and then I think it goes up to, I'd say, 2 hours to 3 hours. Because that's not a sleep.
That's not a nap.
It's not a sleep.
That's a very extended nap.
Okay, Sean, you could be the voice of reason here. We've had this conversation. We've had this fight.
Okay, I'll
last
let you into. I'll
now.
Let you into. Because I love napping.
Yeah, everybody
I
loves
love
napping.
It. A nap to me is 10 to 25, 30 minutes.
I disagree. 10 minutes is a lay down.
No, it is. A power nap to me is like 15 minutes. That to me is the power nap. And then like a solid nap is like 35 to 45. I can't go anything over 40, 45 minutes. And that's when the grogginess sets in. The post-nap grogginess.
So we're in agreement, though, that
yeah,
a nap
yeah,
does
yeah.
not last
no.
between 2 and 3 hours.
Rory is agreeing with me. I think you can have a long nap. Because for it to be asleep, it has to be at least 4 hours.
That's a very long nap, I gotta
like, if you... Okay, so, Drew, let's say you're on the couch at home watching Gilmore Girls,
uh-huh.
the reunion.
Did you guys watch? Did you guys catch up
no.
on the
No, but I have been watching,
today?
And I'm kind of ashamed to admit this. I haven't been watching Gilmore Girls, but...
What have you been watching?
I have
this
been...
is going to be great. I'm already excited for this. Because you're laughing already.
Yeah,
you can't
the
even
smirk
get it
says
out.
It all.
I've started binge-watching the Mindy Project.
Well, Mindy Project's
She's
okay.
Funny.
Mindy Kaling's
yeah.
fine.
Yeah, well, I know, but it's, you know, not as maybe... As regular as you would think my watching
I mean,
would be.
Ezzy, you have a serious girlfriend now. You guys live together. There's no doubt whatsoever in my mind that you guys curl up in bed at the end of a long day and you watch a couple episodes of Mindy Project.
Okay,
together.
Let's get back to the nap, though. Let's say you're on the couch watching Gilmore Girls and you fall asleep and then you wake up an hour later.
First of all, nobody falls asleep during Gilmore Girls. The conversation and the dialogue is way too witty that it keeps your attention and holds your attention throughout the entire episode.
That show is so annoying. I don't know how anybody watches that.
So you're saying you haven't caught up on the new episodes?
No.
Okay, you're Mindy Girls for life, though? Or Mindy, sorry, Mindy
oh, yeah,
Project
Mindy Project,
for life?
Yeah, Mindy Kaling is hilarious.
Okay, let's get back to hockey. What is that? What's that the theme song of?
Wanting you the way I do.
Yes, it is. Okay, yeah.
I
don't know. Rory, you were able to pull that up
I have
really
never
quickly.
Seen an episode of Gilmore Girls. I'm just saying.
I don't believe that.
Honestly...
How is Lorelai doing these days?
Okay, let's talk about Sidney Crosby and Connor McDavid, because I honestly can't do this at 11:25 at night otherwise.
I remember when Rory was in high school, and then she went on to go to university, and now she's an accomplished young woman.
For a guy who never watched the show, you seem to do you know what school she went to?
No. I mean,
it's your favorite school.
They live in
Ezzy.
A small town in eastern
oh my God.
United States.
They live in Stars Hollow.
Stars Hollow, right.
And you should know the school that she went to because you were proudly repping its shirt a few weeks ago on the show.
Brock Cordon?
No, close. Close. That's a good idea, but that's an elementary school.
What other school was I repping?
You were repping a vegetable on your shirt.
Oh, kale.
Yes.
So she went to Kale school?
She went to Yale as
oh,
a...
Oh, okay.
So one of the characters in Gilmore Girls is a kale farmer?
No. Ezzy was wearing a t-shirt that said Kale instead of Yale. It was a takeoff of the sort of famous Yale t-shirt.
Drew, can we get to the Art Ross race?
I hate you. Connor McDavid is leading the Art Ross race with 31 points in 24 games played. Mark
yep.
Scheifele and Nikita Kucherov second in the NHL with 26 points.
Yep.
And then a little bit further down the list with at 7th in the NHL is Sidney Crosby. He's
yes.
got 22 points in 17 games played. He's actually tied with Connor McDavid with 1.29 points per game played so far this season. Is this one of the better scoring races with the most elite NHL talent that we've seen in the last number of years?
Yeah, it is. And I think this year you're going to see two players hit 100 points, and those two players are going to be Connor McDavid and Sidney Crosby. I don't think it's being talked enough about, I should say. Sidney Crosby leading the league in goals. He misses the first six games of the season due to post-concussion like syndrome or symptoms, I should say. I mean, I had to go back and I did a little research. I don't think there has been a race like this since 2008 to 2010. And 2008 to 2010 is when it was basically Evgeny Malkin, Alexander Ovechkin, and Sidney Crosby. And you had three guys hit 100 points. And I think, you know, you go back a couple years ago, Jamie Benn won the scoring race with 87 points and John Tavares had 86 points. But to me, this is like it is, like it was in 2008 to 2010. And, you know, Crosby's averaging 1.3. McDavid is averaging 1.3. Scheifele's up there. I personally think at the end of the season, it's going to be between McDavid and Crosby, and then you're going to have some other players up there, but certainly I think those guys are going to start to separate themselves maybe towards the middle part of the season. But I don't think we've seen anything like this since Crosby was scoring 50 goals and putting up 100 points, and you had Malkin putting up 100 points, and you had other guys up there too. And Datsyuk around that time was around 100 points. Mm-hmm.
Well, you mentioned that 08 season. So yep. I went back and, you know, 08, 09, there were 19 players in the NHL who averaged more than a point a game. And I'm talking about guys who played the majority of the season. I'm talking about guys who, you know, who play like 40 games and get 41 points or something. So to have 19 guys get over a point per game, because in the recent years, you're looking at 7-8 guys get a point per game. So, you know, going back, and it's almost a decade now, it goes to show you that was really when the peak NHL scoring or some really impressive performances. Last time you had a big, huge number of guys, 20 guys who are, you know, breaking that point per game barrier.
Yeah, it's looking like it's going to be one offensively filled season around the league, just looking at the points and the points per game. And it's interesting that Nikita Kucherov is able to maintain the production value with Steven Stamkos going down, and
he's a better player than Steven Stamkos
all around. I absolutely agree with you, Drew. He is. If you ever watched the Lightning, just watch Nikita Kucherov for an extended period of time. Just have your ISO cam, so to speak, on him, and he's an absolute stud. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's so slick. He was seasoned in the A, and he's just he just finds a knack to put the puck in the net, and he makes everyone around him better. And he's been an absolute phenom to watch. And then you look at, you know, your general cast of characters. You see the names like Kane, Crosby, but then you look down the list and you're starting to see names that, you know, that weren't around in the last few. Cam Atkinson, you know, Phil Kessel's up here, Panarin, Burns, you know, these guys are all your regular cast of characters that lead the league, but you're starting to see that youth kind of jump up in here now in the league. A little bit of a passing of the torch in the NHL with that youth, that skill youth moving their way up the rankings, and it's been fun to watch.
And you saw that in 2005, 2006 when Crosby and Ovechkin came into the league, and it was Joe Thornton who actually led the league in points that year, and then it continued in 2008, 2009 when the Penguins and Wings were going up against each other in the Stanley Cup Finals. It was actually Henrik Sedin that won the points race that year, Drew, in 2009, 2010.
Won me my draft.
Yeah, 112 points, won the Hart Trophy. Seven players had over 90 points in those 2 years, 2008, 2009, and then 2009, 2010. I wouldn't be surprised if we see seven players, maybe not over 90 points, but probably over 85 points. And again, I think McDavid's easily going to hit 100. And the way Crosby's playing right now, I wouldn't be surprised if he hits 100. And in those 2 years, there were three players that hit 100 points. Last year, there was only one player, of course, Patrick Kane, who hit 100 points. So, especially if Crosby misses six of the 82 games and he still hits 100 points, it would be incredible. And I agree, Sean, you're seeing the passing of the torch. It's, you know, back in 2005, 2006, it was maybe, you know, a guy like Joe Sakic passing the torch to Sidney Crosby. Now it's Sidney Crosby, you know, not necessarily passing the torch to Connor McDavid, but he's fighting for the torch.
Yeah, they're in a fight for the torch because Crosby's not giving it up. And I mean, he has been so good for the Penguins this season.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody was concerned about the concussion early on for, you know, good reason, of course, but he has come back and not missed a beat. I think I took Sidney Crosby 7th or 8th overall in your pool, Ezzy.
Well, that was a fantastic pick.
Well, at some point in time, Sidney Crosby's sitting there. I know everybody's concerned about the concussion, but he's Sidney Crosby. At some point in time, he's worth the flyer. Still, I'm in dead last, but that, you know, it was a good pick, though.
Good pick, yeah. Can we? I'm looking at number 10 right here, Alex Galchenyuk. How much has he benefited from Alexander Radulov being on the Montreal Canadiens this year?
I think Radulov has been a tremendous weapon for the Canadiens. All it cost them was the, you know, the $5 million and change. But it doesn't, you know, to get a free asset or an asset who only costs you money like that, it's a great move. Galchenyuk certainly the beneficial recipient of Radulov's presence.
And I took Radulov as the last pick in our entire draft this year.
And what place are you in?
I think I'm fighting for first right now.
There you go, fighting for first.
And Drew, just one last point. If you were wondering why I said Joe Sakic passing the torch to Sidney Crosby in 2005-2006, Sakic had 87 points that year.
Good to know.
Oh.
Crosby's 87.
I got it. Good to know.
And then he had 100 points the next year.
Is there a player whose number
is one of my favorite of all
time. Is there a player whose number is 100?
Sakic is a beauty.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Josh Brewster joins us. He's the Anaheim Ducks radio host. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290.
NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve returns on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to NHL This Week with Illegal Curve Hockey. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We head out to Anaheim, where we welcome to the program Josh Brewster. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. Josh, good afternoon. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening to you, too. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure to have you. Josh brought you on to talk about the Anaheim Ducks as we're about a quarter of the way through the NHL season. Ducks sitting in second place in the Pacific Division with a record of 11-8-4 thus far this year. How would you describe the Ducks season thus far and Randy Carlyle's second stint behind the bench as Anaheim Ducks head coach?
Well, you know, I think that it's an interesting sort of search for consistency in a league where, you know, it's hard to really get separation from the 500 mark. And I'll put it this way. I think Randy was a great rehire, and I think that Randy's got the club playing very direct to the net hockey, very slot intensive hockey. They don't spend a lot of time swinging around the perimeter. They're not playing sideways, and I really like the hard forecheck that he's always instilled going back, you know, the last 10 or 11 years. And I think the Ducks have searched for a little bit of consistency in the goal scoring ranks, but honestly, I think most of the nights when they do get beat, I think it's because someone was the better club. And they're not really taking themselves out of a lot of games. There's been a game or two when they took too many penalties and they started slow. But really, for the most part, when they're getting beat, they're getting beat. And I think that Randy's system has worked real well so far. And, you know, I think there's some good stuff happening down there. They've just got to find some consistency. And no, as the year goes on, there'll be a couple roster spots, I think, in the forward ranks that, you know, that might change. But I think the club's looking pretty good right now.
Josh, both Rickard Rakell and Hampus Lindholm signed late with the Anaheim Ducks. Rickard Rakell signing before Hampus Lindholm, and then he took a little bit while to come over to the U.S., and he's been at a point-per-game clip. What kind of impact did not having those two in the lineup have on the Ducks? Was that felt more so earlier in the season, and that's kind of water under the bridge at this point?
Well, yeah, I think it is. I mean, I think when you look at how Hampus Lindholm, how strong he is on his skates and how good he is at getting positioning, you know, it's funny because he has an offensive upside, but it's one of those things where, you know, if you don't notice the defenseman, he's probably doing his job, you know. And in the case of Lindholm, I think that since he's come back, he's been very steadily getting inside on opponents, maintaining position, clearing the zone, skating it out of the zone very well. There's only been a couple of instances where he's been beat, but that's going to happen to every defenseman. As far as Rickard Rakell goes, I think this is really, aside from the fact that Kessler and Fowler are probably their best players thus far, I think Ricard Raquel is making an argument that he's probably the best thing that's happened to them all season. And the fact is their offense has improved since he came back. I mean, he has 9 goals in 14 games. And if the last time I checked, that would be 4th in the NHL in goals per game. He's up there with Crosby. And so, you know, here's a guy who signs a bridge deal after scoring 20 goals, and, you know, you only pray that it's not a flash in the pan. And this guy had some off-season medical issues. He couldn't play in the World Cup, and he comes in late after visa issues, et cetera, and contract issues, and it's like he hasn't missed a beat. So, you know, that really has been a huge shot in the arm, because when you stop and think of the subtractions like Jamie McGinn, Brandon Peary, David Perron, Chris Stewart, I mean, the Ducks added a lot of good veteran offensive parts last year as the season went on. And now you subtract all of them, they've got some greener guys down in the lineup like Cramarosa and Andre Kasha and, you know, Chris Wagner and guys who are really green. And when you put Raquel back in and he hasn't missed a beat and he's probably even better than he was, he really is turning out to be a sniper. And you know, that's a real positive for the Ducks, because there's a couple question marks in the forward ranks, and we can talk about those too.
Josh, Nick Ritchie was drafted right after Nikolaj Ehlers was taken by the Winnipeg Jets. There was a lot of debate whether, you know, the Jets should take the big Ritchie or the skilled Ehlers. How's Ritchie looked as he, you know, approaches what should be his first full NHL season?
Well, I think he's got 5 goals now, and obviously that's outpacing what he was able to produce as a rookie. You know, I always pull out the stats on guys like John LeClair or Brendan Shanahan, some of the great, you know, quote-unquote power forwards, you know. And when you look at Ritchie, or you look at those guys, you know, it's never like you just come storming out of the gate as a rookie and everything is just gangbusters. That only happens to so many guys. And you know, even Shanny and LeClair, it took them a couple seasons to really start scoring goals. Nick Ritchie is a big kid who, you know, it's kind of like when you have a puppy, and, you know, and he's got to kind of grow into his skin. And I think that what's happening with Ritchie right now is when he hits and he's involved, he's a lot to handle. He's almost 240 pounds, and he right now he's getting the positioning down and the timing down at the NHL level that he didn't have as a rookie. And that's starting to really come into play. Now, what they were hoping was that he would just click with Getzlaff and Perry and he would be the third guy. But he's not where Ricard Raquel is, and Ricard Raquel has drawn the top left-wing slot, and he deserves it. The thing about Ritchie now, Ritchie's out there with Antoine Vermette now, and he's got to really, you know, he's got to keep going, because they've got to make sure that they maximize their investment in Antoine Vermette. And so, you know, Ritchie has a big opportunity, and I think that with 5 goals now, I think that you know, that he's probably on pace for 15 or 20 goals. Whether he actually gets there, I don't know. But certainly if your third line left wing can come up with 15 or 16 goals or so, that would be in his second year of duty. I think that would be considered a success for sure.
Josh Brewster is our guest on NHL This Week. Josh is the Anaheim Ducks radio host. Josh, Ryan Getzlaff, I mean, we always know just how dynamic of a setup man he is, and we see that year in, year out. Last year, he only had 13 goals. This year, through about a quarter of the season, he's only got 2 goals. What's a realistic number of goals to expect from Ryan Getzlaff at this point in his career?
I think a realistic number of goals from Ryan Getzlaff is 20, and he's not on pace for anything close to that. And he last season, he had a horrible start.
Mm-hmm.
This season, he came in, and he was shooting more. And in fact, I think if you look it up, he probably is on pace to shoot more. I have no idea why the goals aren't coming more for him. And curiously, Corey Perry is not on pace for anything close to what he's capable of doing. He's got 4 goals now. He's on pace for about 16 goals. That's way low. That's about half of what you would expect, at least. So I don't. It's a bit of a curiosity, but I got to say, you know, it's been a bit of a drought for Getzlaff. And he had one against, I think, the Sharks the other night. It was a big goal. But, you know, Perry is on a long dry streak now, 12 games. And so really the only one who can answer that is the guy in the mirror. And I don't quite get why, you know, the assists are coming for Perry. The assists, I mean, Getzlaff, the last time I checked, was second in the league in assists. But the Ducks do have a concern right now that's emerging, which is what's going on with Perry, what's going on with Getzlaff. Some have suggested that Corey Perry is not as consistently hungry for going to the tough part of the ice right in front of the net. Now, the last couple games, to his credit, he has looked like the Corey Perry of old, but, you know, for sure, he's got to rule the area in front of the net. And if I was Carlisle right now, I would take Perry off of the top power play unit, put him on the second unit, leave Kessler with Getzlaff on the first unit, because Corey Perry, one of his strengths is to be able to produce on the power play. And it really is a curiosity right now, and I don't think I have an answer, and I think that the guy in the mirror is going to be the guy who can answer, you know, what's going to be with Corey Perry or Ryan Getzlaff, because there's no doubt that it's a deficiency right now for the Ducks, where their top line is not doing what a $9 million a year paycheck would dictate.
Josh, yesterday, former Ducks winger Travis Moen announced his retirement from the NHL. In 2007, Moen picked up a Stanley Cup ring with the Anaheim Ducks. How are Ducks fans going to remember Travis Moen?
Oh, they remember him very fondly, I can assure you. Nobody's going to forget, you know, Moen and Niedermeyer and Paulson. As much as any other combination, that delivered the Stanley Cup to Anaheim. And he played a lunch bucket kind of game, and you could always depend on that guy. And I guarantee you, if he, you know, shows his face in Honda Center, you know, there would be a big ovation for him. You know, I saw Temu last night, and for every Temu, you know, you need a guy like Travis to really take care of business in the shutdown game and to generate just enough offense to justify, to help, you know, power the team. And I think Travis Moen will always be well remembered, and he was a major contributor to that Cup team. So, you know, happy trails to him, and you know, he was a heck of a useful hockey player.
Josh, I was watching a Ducks game this week, and the broadcasters were talking about Andrew Cogliano's Ironman streak and just what a ridiculous accomplishment it is. I guess my question is, should Andrew Cogliano write a book, How to Stay Healthy in the NHL?
Well, he shouldn't write it yet. He should write it after he retires. I'll tell you what.
That's a good point.
You know, don't jinx it now, you know, but he's got Craig Ramsey in his sights now. Okay, so now you're talking very big names in terms of the Ironman. And when you look at how that guy plays and how he's willing to go into tough areas of the ice at speed, okay, there's guys who are not willing to do what he does. And right now, the biggest asset that the Ducks have, other than a couple of, you know, very good goaltenders and a good defensive core, that line with Kessler, Cogliano, and Silverberg, to me, might be the most underrated line in the whole National Hockey League right now, because they can shut down the opposition and they can generate a lot of points. I think Andrew Cogliano was, you know, this is the way it goes in the NHL, but he's a loss for the Edmonton Oilers. Mm-hmm. He's been, his subtraction from the Oilers has been to their detriment for years, if you ask me. And the way that he plays in Anaheim, you know, sometimes the goals are hard to come by for him. But, you know, this is the guy I'm talking about, where, you know, if this guy can generate 15 goals every year the way he plays, I think he's a tremendous asset. And, you know, you can build a talented roster, but sometimes there are roles that need to be filled. And he is so willing to do what it takes to win and kill penalties and go at speed into tough areas and to you know, when you look at how he played last night against Shea Weber, a much bigger guy, this is a guy who works as hard as anyone in the gym, keeps himself very healthy, and I'll also tell you that there is not a single time where he doesn't show his face to the press and doesn't stand up and isn't accountable. He's always accountable, always a gentleman, and the way he lays it out on the ice, to me, he's a great NHLer, and I hope he spends the rest of his career with the Ducks, and I hope he becomes the all-time Iron Man one day, because he's in tremendous condition, and you know there's days he could have taken a day off, but when you're into that kind of Iron Man stratosphere, you're showing up for games that other guys with the same aches and pains aren't going to show up for.
Josh, we'll let you go on this last question, and you actually mentioned Jakob Silfverberg in your previous answer. And if you look at the, you know, the mock expansion drafts that are taking place now, the one guy that the Anaheim Ducks, most people have, you know, leaving the Ducks roster and the Ducks not being able to protect is Jakob Silfverberg, largely due to the fact they're going to have to protect, unless something happens, they're going to have to protect four defensemen because Kevin Bieksa has that no-move clause in his contract. Is this concerning Bob Murray? Is he looking for ways to make a trade to be able to get around that so he can actually hold on to Jakob Silfverberg and protect seven forwards and three defensemen as opposed to having to go with the eight skater option that seems right now he would have to do?
Yeah. In fact, I will tell you that my answer to your question is yes. Your question is dead on. I think that Bob Murray has got to think about that because, you know, remember, it was Bobby Ryan who they traded out in order to get Jakob Silfverberg, and also the pick that became Nick Ritchie, and another prospect, Stefan Nazan, who's been injured so much, I don't know if he'll ever make it to the NHL. But no, I mean, when you think of winning, you really won the Bobby Ryan trade in a lot of ways because, you know, you've got Silfverberg, you've got Ritchie, you dumped off the salary in his game. And listen, I love Bobby Ryan. I think he's a great player. But there's no question that Murph has got to think about, you know, you cannot just lose Jakob Silfverberg. So, you know, does it come to pass where you have to try to convince Kevin Bieksa to give you a list of teams to which he'll be traded? Because when you stop and think about losing Silfverberg, I mean, losing Bieksa would pale in comparison, quite honestly. And, you know, Silverberg's headed for a 20-goal season. I've no doubt, and the way he's playing now, we were just talking about Cogliano, the way he's playing now, you can't lose him. So I'm sure Murph has got to come up with something crafty, because you're right, that is the name that comes up all the time when they talk about Vegas.
Josh Brewster is the Anaheim Ducks post-game radio host. He joins us from Anaheim. Josh, really appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL This Week.
Oh, guys, the honor is all mine. Thanks for calling, and love to do it anytime.
Absolutely, Josh. We'll get you on again throughout the course of the season. Let's head to break.
Thanks, guys.
You're listening to NHL This Week, one final segment on this Wednesday evening.
This is NHL This Week with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
One final segment, Wednesday evening here on TSN 1290. Reminder, of course, Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 9 a.m. We'll get you set for the Jets and the Blues, which takes place in St. Louis later on Saturday night. Our first sighting of the St. Louis Blues this season. It seems like last year the Jets played the Blues every second game. This year you only play the Blues four times in the Central Division. I think it's once a month. It's actually December, once in December, once in January, once in March, once in April. So it is well spaced out, the Jets and the Blues visits, their interactions this season. And then, of course, Sunday night they head over to Chicago. It's a back-to-back for both teams. The Blackhawks playing Saturday afternoon in Philadelphia, and then we'll travel home to play the Jets on Saturday night. But we're getting ahead of ourselves because the Jets and the Oilers, they'll do battle tomorrow night, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290, of course, available on TSN 3 as well. Quick look around the NHL, being that it was a Wednesday night, usually a quieter night in the league. Tonight was no different. In Calgary, the Flames on the back of Chad Johnson, one of the great stories so far this season, having taken over from Brian Elliott as the number one goalie so far in Calgary. the Flames defeat the Toronto Maple Leafs 3-0. This Flames team getting closer to getting back to sort of where people expected from them after a very slow start this season.
Yeah, and two-thirds of those goals came in the first minute of the game. Freddie Hamilton and Chris Versteeg scoring within the first 50 seconds of that game. So certainly a bit of a letdown for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who had the big game against the Edmonton Oilers in their previous game. They picked up a win. And the Calgary Flames right now, they're not in a playoff spot, but I agree with you, Drew. They're starting to play a little bit better, and I don't think anybody thought Chad Johnson was going to be outplaying Brian Elliott at this point in the season, but you know it's happened, and Brian Burke came out and kind of denied those Dougie Hamilton trade rumors.
Yes, in the manner in which only Brian Burke could, and we'll probably play that on Saturday's show. But Burke threw cold water on those trade rumors. By the way, that I still think they would trade him if the offer's there.
Yeah, and if a team gets a good offer for any player, with maybe the exception of Sidney Crosby or Connor McDavid or Patrick Laine, there are certain players that are untouchable, but certainly a guy like Dougie Hamilton is not untouchable. I said on Saturday's show, Drew, that I didn't think that they should be trading him because I think he's a good defenseman, and I realize some people have a problem with the way he plays defensively, but the guy's 6'5", and he had 40 points in the NHL last year. There aren't many defensemen that can do that at the NHL level, so we'll see if Dougie Hamilton remains a Flame long-term, but certainly a big win for them, and you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs kind of continued to be inconsistent, but not a bad first 25 games for them.
No, you would take it. To be expected from a young team, inconsistency is not unexpected, and I think most Leafs fans would be generally pleased the way they've performed this season.
Yeah, and they're pleased because of three guys, Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and William Nylander, right?
Yeah.
Those guys have been fantastic, and there are obviously other guys on the team that are playing well, but those three guys are, you could argue that two of those three guys could be Calder finalists right now, and even William Nylander could be in that conversation, but certainly Marner and Matthews have been lights out.
Freddie Anderson's actually been good in Toronto, too, after his really rocky start to the season. In Brooklyn, the New York Islanders won 5-3 over the Pittsburgh Penguins. They were up 3-0 after 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. The Penguins came back, tied the game with about 6 minutes to play. They had tied the game up at 3. Then the Islanders take the lead on the strength of Anders Lee, his fifth goal of the year. They make it 4-3. And then into an empty net, a whopping 3 seconds later, Nikolai Kuhlman gets his second of the year. So how about that? Two goals in 3 seconds ties an NHL record as the Islanders defeat the Penguins by a 5-3 margin tonight.
Yeah, the three stars in that game were Anders Lee, Casey Zizekas, and then the Bad Ice got the third star.
The Bad Ice got the third star. Okay, good. Good for the Bad Ice. It was, I didn't realize it was that a Kiva contributor to the Islanders, but the Islanders, who have been woeful this year, one of the most disappointing teams in the entire NHL, they take a 5-3 victory over the Pittsburgh Penguins. One other game, it's still in action. Apparently it's going to end at about 3 a.m. Winnipeg time. The San Jose Sharks are up 3-1 on the Los Angeles Kings with 8.5 minutes to play in the third period in Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's a playoff rematch, right, Drew? Those two teams hate each other. And the Sharks have been playing surprisingly well, and the Kings have been playing surprisingly well. So looks like the Sharks are going to hang on there, but those teams are going to be fighting for the rest of the season for those last playoff positions in the Pacific Division.
Yeah, or I mean, the Sharks right now atop the Pacific Division. But you're right. If there's only three teams coming out of the Pacific, the expectations for most people would expect that it'd be the Sharks, the Ducks, and the LA Kings, because they usually have been the only three playoff teams to come out of the Pacific Division. Again, reminder, the Jets and the Oilers tomorrow night, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Coverage, game day coverage, I suppose, starts in about 6 hours' time with Jim and Troy and Brandon and the boys on the big show. I think we'll leave with some donuts or something a little bit later on. That's it for this Wednesday evening edition of NHL This Week. A big thanks to our guest, Josh Brewster, the Anaheim Ducks radio host, and Dave Jamieson from TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Big thanks to our sponsors, Keener Jerseys, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes. Get it sent to your iPod, subscribe, you'll get it automatically each and every time we are on air. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. for producer Rory doing a great job behind the board. For Sean Asor, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.